Dirt and Spray continues.
I think I'm becoming lactose intolerant. Is that possible?
It's breakfast time with Dirt and Sprague.
Dude, I could choke down six of those easily.
Dirt and Sprague.
Eggs, breakfast, and go whoop ass.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. College football and farting in the huddle talk on The Fan is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years guaranteed Xfinity. Imagine that. We will get to, obviously, the audio elements of Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague today.
Lots said yesterday. Final day of Big Ten Media Days.
Yeah, there's almost like there's too much audio.
It's
the
too
NFL
much.
Camps, yeah. I'm trying to go to all the camp spots that I can see good audio cuts. You got the college football Media Days going.
It's overwhelming. Now the Media Days are kind of wrapped up. That will ease up. A lot more training camp stuff. Uh-huh. We'll get some coach press conferences at some point as we get closer to the start of college football. But Media Days, man, they're shooting that audio down your throat like a fire hose.
There's no doubt about it. We will talk with Adam Rittenberg coming up in just a couple minutes. He wrote a piece on ESPN about Indiana. Kurt Cignetti made some waves. We've got Jed Fish just openly telling you what the situation is at UW and also some ideas of how to fix college football. Sticking in Seattle, Mike McDonald had a Hard Knocks tee sent out yesterday. And it's exactly what you'd expect from Mike McDonald. And
yes.
So he'll join us. But I want to tell you guys, would you like a fun fact?
I would love a fun fact.
According to the Hard Rock Bet Book.
Hard Rock Bet Book.
The casino?
Yes.
With the guitar?
With the guitar. The guitar casino.
I've actually never been to the Hard Rock Casino.
Neither have I. I've never been inside of it.
I think I've only been to Caesars and Treasure Island.
Ooh, really? Miss
yeah.
Circus?
You, I, and Johnny got tall drinks.
We did.
And then
we definitely went to Treasure Island on that trip.
And we
that.
Stayed at Caesars.
We stayed at Caesars.
I didn't go anywhere else.
That was all you went to? That's the only trip to Vegas?
I've only been to Vegas once.
Only one time.
And it was that trip.
Yeah, I want to get back to Vegas.
According to the Hard Rock Bet, would you like some good information?
I would love some good information.
Today.
Yes.
This is a Friday.
It is a Friday. It's the last day of July.
Yesterday was the last Thursday the rest of the year without football.
Thank you, Jesus.
Hall of Fame game next week.
Thank you.
And then I think you got more stuff after. I don't know what game would be after that. Does preseason start that early?
No. So this is the last Sunday without football because you have the Hall of Fame game on Thursday, and then the first full week of preseason football kicks off the next Thursday.
Oh, gotcha.
So you have a week from yesterday, if that makes sense. So next Thursday, one game. The next Thursday, bunches of games. And then that Sunday, Saturday is when we start playing preseason games.
So there's some fun NFL and football stuff. Let's step into the Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague as we do every day at 7 a.m. And on occasion, we're joined by a guest. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, is joining us to sit down, have breakfast, and talk college football. Adam, good morning. Thanks for hopping on with us. We appreciate your time. What is the Adam Rittenberg breakfast special today? What would Adam Rittenberg have for breakfast?
Oh, man. God, you know, nothing too exciting. I'm not like a big pancake guy. When I'm in the South, I do like grits. I don't have it often. Ooh. Probably not very good for you, but I do like that. Yeah, some combination of omelet, potatoes, bacon, you know, nothing too exciting. But usually with three kids, it's very difficult to even sit down for about, you know, 90 seconds before we have to go off somewhere.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Let's just take the potatoes and the bacon, and then we'll roll it up, and that's the omelet. We'll just call it the Rittenberg.
Oh, there you go. I love it.
That sounds exceptional. Really good stuff from Big Ten Media Day. Fun to follow the journey. It's got to be nice to be in your backyard there over there in the Central Time Zone. What was your biggest takeaway from Big Ten Media Day? We saw the SEC, and my biggest takeaway was, what a bunch of whiners. What was your takeaway from the Big Ten Media Days?
Well, I think it was just the you know, overall pride that's shown in the league. I covered the league for a long time, and they'll never match the SEC pride, you know, for all that goes into that league and how they play it. But they are certainly excited about what's happened here lately. And even amid all the chaos in college athletics, and this has been a very good period for the Big Ten, and it has a chance to continue. The depth at the top of the league is as good as it's been in a really long time, maybe ever. You have a second group of teams that I think have the potential to at least sniff the college football playoff. And I think the investment and the alignment under Tony Petitti, who, again, is a bit of a controversial character outside of the Big Ten, but within the Big Ten, really leads the league well and is very popular among the coaches and administrators. So the Big Ten's in a good place. Like everybody else, you know, there's a lot of changes in the sport, but this has been a much better, you know, last 3, 4, 5 years than certainly the previous 20.
Yeah, imagine if they win another one this year, too, and the conference you get 4 in a row at Big Ten Media Day will sound like next year. I think one of the most interesting questions about the Big Ten year in and year out for me is we know there's a group of teams at the top of the conference that are title contenders, right? I think most people this year would say Oregon, Indiana, and Ohio State, who are near the top of the odds. The next team is always a fascinating race for me of, like, who's next? Does another one get into the college football playoff? Because I think you can make arguments around other, you know, different teams in the conference. How does Adam Rittenberg feel about the race to fourth, and how many playoff teams do you think are in the conference this year?
Yeah, I think it certainly four is a reasonable expectation. But, you know, all these teams need to do work, right? Even the top three, but certainly, you know, those other contenders. I think of the teams that are vying to be fourth, USC may be the most talented and complete, but might have the hardest schedule of those contenders. Whereas Penn State, I don't know how talented they are. They're certainly experienced, and they're very comfortable playing under Matt Campbell because it's essentially his Iowa State team moving over to State College with a few others. But their schedule is really in their favor, right? You know, they don't have Ohio State or Indiana or Oregon. They have, you know, USC at home. They have Michigan on the road. Those are some of their bigger games this year. And if they can navigate that, you know, at 10-2, you're going to get in the playoff if you're a Big Ten team in most seasons. So, you know, whether it's them, there's a lot of, you know, talk around Washington, you know, speaking to Jed Fish and Damon Williams Jr. yesterday about, you know, their chances to take another step. He's obviously got to play better, Damon, in the biggest games. But, you know, Jed Fish telling me he thinks they can have a top 10 defense this year. And if you pair that with a quarterback with the playmaking skills of Damon Williams, you can do some special things and maybe get back to the playoffs. So is it those two? Is it Michigan? Is it Iowa, which has been very close? Or is it another team that you know maybe can rise up and surprise us like Indiana has the last couple of years?
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, is our guest here. Big Ten Media Day wrapped up with its last day yesterday in Chicago. He's been covering and following college football and the Big Ten for quite some time. Find some great work at ESPN.com and on Twitter at ESPN Rittenberg. All right, I'm gonna give you a hard one. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
You have to choose one of these three teams to be the most disappointing one that falls out of the race that we don't see coming. Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon.
Ooh. Wow. You know, it's a tough one because you actually could make an argument for Ohio State, as crazy as that sounds, based on their schedule. You know, they have an incredibly difficult schedule, especially on the road. You're having to go to Texas, having to go to USC, having to go to Indiana, you know, having Oregon at home. I mean, those are all really tough games that, you know, I think they probably could have benefited from midway through last season when they were cruising, and then they run into Indiana and Miami in the postseason, and it's over for them. So in some ways, you know, they're going to be really tested, but there's so many games that could, you know, potentially go either way for them. It might be Indiana. I think I feel best about Oregon. I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you guys, but I just think that hey, if they don't, their season is going to be measured by how they do in the playoff, not whether they get to the playoff. If they don't get to the playoff, it's a massive disappointment, and we're asking questions about Dan Lanning and all sorts of things. But with Indiana, you know, again, a lot of new players in bigger roles, even though Kurt Cignetti was clear in saying, hey, a couple, you know, these guys have been part of our program for a number of years. You can talk about the JMU guys being gone, but you know, these are the Indiana guys. These guys are used to how we run a program and the standards that we set, and have grown into these roles that now they're going to be the faces of the program. So, you know, Indiana, to think they're just going to fall out of the conversation, you know, because of who they lost, I think is a little bit naive.
Yeah, it is. Every year we get that. There's a team near the top, and nobody ever, like Penn State, Clemson had a couple cases of it last year in the top 10 with title expectations. You never see it happening. You just hope it isn't going to be your team. I'll kind of follow up that trend of a question with another one of, you got a list of quarterbacks in this conference that are very accomplished. If you needed to win one game, a Big Ten champion, like I got everything on the line, choose your fighter of Big Ten quarterbacks. Which is the one that you trust the most?
Well, I have a big piece coming out in a few weeks on, you know, just kind of quarterback intel that I've collected. And it is a really good group in the Big Ten this year. But I'll tell you that the guy that has gotten a lot of praise around the conference and is seen as a real, potentially high draft pick is Jaden Maiava of USC. He was leading the nation in QBR for much of last year. I think he finished second. So he's super efficient. A lot of big plays. Obviously, he'll be throwing to some new receivers, at least guys that'll be in bigger roles this year. But he's someone who coaches really think has great potential. Obviously, Dante Moore, Julian Sain, some of these other guys who are coming back are notable as well. But I think in Damon Williams Jr. But I think the buzz around Jaden Maiava as a third year starter for Lincoln Riley is very real.
What did you make, Adam, of Dan Lanning and the noise coming in about Lanning? Their season obviously doesn't end the way they want the last two seasons against Ohio State and Indiana last year in the playoff. Just the noise about him, the reputation he's kind of accumulated the last two seasons with the way the seasons have ended, and then what he was talking about at Media Day.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of respect for Dan. How can you have to respect the record, the ability to adjust to a new conference the way they have, winning the Big Ten in their first year in the league and what losing only one regular season game in 2 years. But you are ultimately judged by your postseason performance. And it's why I'm kind of curious your guys' take. Like, is anyone going to care what Oregon does in the regular season? Unless they really struggle. Because they're going to get to the postseason. And that's when they have to deliver. And that's when they have to compete at a lot higher level than they did in the Rose Bowl game 2 years ago. And then obviously the Peach Bowl this year. They've got to be in those games. And they've got to win those games, or else, given what he's been given as far as resources and money and staffing and all the different things that Oregon is investing in their program, you do start to question, is he the guy to get them a national championship? Because that's the only thing left for Oregon, right? They've won conference championships, they've gotten to big time bowl games, they've produced NFL players. You've got to win a national championship. And yeah, that's maybe harsh because only one team does it every year, but that's what Dan aspires to do. And that's how he's going to be judged, especially this season when they're seemingly all in. I mean, I look at the national landscape, and I think the two teams to me, guys, that feel like they're completely all in for this season, given who's coming back, are Oregon and Texas. And only one of them can win a national championship. Maybe neither of them win a national championship, but both of those coaches are under tremendous pressure, rightfully so, to deliver not just a good regular season record or even a conference championship, but in the playoff. That's where they're going to be judged.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Adam. We had that debate the other day, and I argued that as an Oregon alum, they threw at me if Oregon goes into the Shoe and wins by 14 or 17, right, and it's like an eye-opening result of, oh my God, you dominated. Maybe that changes some of the narrative. But the tough part, to your point from Lanning, is that he's done we've seen him win big regular season games. That's not new. Yeah. He beat Ohio State. He's beaten Penn State. He's won Big Ten championship games. Like, there will be, whether you're in the fandom or not, I think there will be that thought in the back of your mind of like, all right, nice win, but let's see it when it matters most of the way the season ended the last 2 years.
Well, to let you in on our conversation on that, Adam, I think it's a very valid thing, and I think he would know better than I because he's the alum, he roots for him, and we're the home of the Ducks. But I just, as an observer and a sports fan, I also find that a kind of a miserable existence to, like, if Oregon dominates, not being able to go, man, that was awesome. It's like, well, are you going to do that in January? It's like, I don't know. We can only get you
it's
only one title winner a year.
It for sure is.
And look, the whole title or bust thing, I know they did it to themselves, but I've also heard it. It's like, what's the bust? Are we firing Dan Lanning? He's 39 years old. He's a top five recruiter. They're winning 12 games every year. I don't know what the bust part of that is. Certainly the pressure's on him, but I just think there's ranges of opinions on the Dan Lanning Oregon stuff going into the year.
Yeah, and that's fair. And again, you guys know this, and I think nationally, if you really study Oregon, not that it made sense or justified or it excused how they lost the game to Indiana last year, but there were a lot of things working against them. They were not a healthy football team. Their coordinators had already taken Power Four head coaching jobs. Like, it wasn't ideal. You're going in to face a team that's absolutely rolling in basically a road environment. So I'm not making excuses for them, but I think Oregon can enter the playoff in a better position with this year's team, perhaps, than they did a year ago. They obviously have to address some of the offensive line departures, but you look at their skill and the depth and having a quarterback like Dante, the number of starts he'll have at that time in his career in college, they should be at their peak. And I don't think last year they were. Certainly 2 years ago, that was a shock, right? I mean, they were an undefeated team. They'd won the Big Ten. They'd already beaten Ohio State. And to get bulldozed like that was wow. I guess in hindsight, I was a little less shocked that it happened with Indiana. But the bottom line is it can't happen again.
Yeah.
Early in Dan's career, it was wow, he's such a gambler, and sometimes those gambles backfired against Washington. But now it's like, oh God, what's going to happen when he goes into the playoffs? Like, is his team going to compete? And that's the question that has to be addressed here.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There's a lot of pressure on him to win a national championship this year, as there is for, to your point, Starkeesian, Marcus Freeman's kind of in this category. There's a lot of guys, Mario, who have been close knocking on the door and haven't been able to do it. If I go to the different level of pressure of, like, you need to take a step this year, you need to showcase that you are moving in the right direction, I'm curious who you would put atop that list, because I know Lincoln's getting a lot of that hot seat conversation. I don't know if they fire him or not, but a lot of pressure at USC. Matt Rhule's got a comment yesterday: we didn't come to Nebraska to go 7-5. You go 7-5 every year, so that's kind of what you're doing every year. Jed Fish, right, is like, hey, we're not getting enough money. Your quarterback tried to leave. We had to sue him to stay. I'm just like, in that next batch of guys of like, man, it's kind of put up or shut up time. Is it an easy Lincoln Riley answer, or is it more complex than that for you?
No, I think it's Lincoln, right? Because Lincoln has obviously been very open about what he felt was lacking at USC, and would come to media days, seemingly year after year, and talk about how bad he had it when he arrived. And I don't think he's wrong, but people get tired of that. And one thing that I've appreciated in talking to Lincoln a couple of times this offseason is that he's not talking about what they don't have. He's talking about what they do have and how he feels like they have enough to get to the college football playoff with the roster, with the way that the program's set up. They obviously bought in an incredible recruiting class, and some of those guys are set to contribute to this year's team. You have a guy like Maiava, who hasn't gone on to the NFL and is one of the more experienced quarterbacks in college football. You also have a brutal schedule, and that's what, again, I am confident in saying I think USC is going to win at least one of the three games at home in Washington, Oregon, Ohio State. If they can win two of those and then split their road games, they're going to the playoff unless they really stumble somewhere else. Now, if they get swept in all those games, we're talking about Lincoln Riley possibly being fired. So that's how important it is for Lincoln. I don't think Jed's on the hot seat. I forget who else you mentioned. I don't think anyone else is necessarily in that same.
Well, Matt Rhule just got an extension, and they probably regret that one right now.
And again, Nebraska, it just, and I feel like I'm always too harsh on them. And I like Matt, and I think Matt's a good coach, but they're just in a different place, right? Like, they're not a program that's ready to compete nationally. And I know they've kind of been foolishly anointed at this time of year, even by some of my colleagues. I won't mention their names, but they're just not there. Like they're not there. They've been a horrible Big Ten team. And now they're, at least, getting out of that horrible phase and being average. But their time in the Big Ten has been a disaster. And there's just no other way to minimize it. And it's Matt's job to get them out of that. And he's trying. And maybe last year was a mini step. But until they're winning 8-9 games a year, I don't really pay a lot of attention to them. Yeah.
Kurt Cignetti, we'll wrap it up here, Adam, because we appreciate the time. I know you've had a busy couple days here, and get back to the old family time and working on some of those stories that we look forward to reading. Kurt Cignetti had a funny line where he basically said, my wife's been bossing me around. I'm ready to boss other people around. He's ready for the season. It's nice to have some unplugging time, some not as much pressure packed time. And I know the media, you're always constantly working, but your downtime is obviously, there's a period there. Are you as desperate for football as we are, to the point where we found out and we've already gotten excited about a September 12th football game at 12:30 between Mississippi State and Minnesota, because P.J. Fleck has never played an SEC team ever, and he's out there at Big Ten Media Day popping off on the SEC versus Big Ten stuff, and now we're excited about Mississippi State and Minnesota. Do you have something like that for yourself in terms of where you're at right now?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good one. I mean, there's a number. I mean, I'm excited for UCLA Cal, the opener, Bob Chesney, all the excitement around him. And Tosh, obviously, a guy that you guys are connected to.
Yeah.
You're going back to Berkeley, where I grew up, and so I kind of fell in love with college football. So, yeah, the best part about covering college football is the college football season. The college football offseason is not a lot of fun. I get asked a lot of things that not you guys, but other hosts think are important, and I don't think the fans care. So the fans care about teams and games and transfer portal and some of the things that are really fun to talk about, new quarterback battles and so forth. So, yeah, this is the best time of year, It was funny. I was talking to Sig, and he was like, yeah, we were down in Hilton Head, and my three grandkids are there, and someone got sick, and then someone's yelling, and all I wanted to do was get back to the office to watch film and, with my old crappy projector, which he still has in his office. So he you can just picture, you know, being in Hilton Head with Sig and how miserable he must have been.
Probably like all parents at the end of summer, like, please come back, school. Please, we need these
totally.
Kids out of
yeah,
here,
I mean,
man.
This whole thing of, like, looking forward to summer, I like, summer's awful. Like, I can't wait for summer to be over.
Adam Rittenberg, that's why he's one of our favorites. ESPN does great work. He's got some good pieces, as he teased there. If you missed this interview, you can always catch it at 1051thefan.com. We'll catch up with him again. Camps are going to open up here soon. Good work, good stuff. Thanks for hopping on. It's great to catch up with you. I hope your summer was okay, and we'll get you back on and talk some more serious college football as the summer goes on.
Awesome, guys. Always fun. Thanks for having me.
All right, there we go. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN,
Are you there? Are you there counting down the days for summer to end?
I'm in a weird spot of summer of, like, there's an element of my kids being at school from a certain block allows me to just never
time and
come
freedom
home
and
worry.
Yeah. You get home, you got a couple hours, get your stuff done.
My wife's already annoyed of them. Now I got to be up. It's like I come home, I need a 45-minute, like, mental reprieve, but there's days I don't do it.
You walk right in the door, and here you go, Dad. Let's go do something.
It's a little bit of that.
Yeah,
but, yeah,
counting down the days.
I mean, I'm looking forward to the fall.
It's almost here, man. We're almost there.
Good stuff from Adam Rittenberg of ESPN. All right, we got more Cafe, and we'll get to it next on The Fan. This is called No Competition.
Ain't no competition out there. Can I get some freestyles out of you this morning?
Binary Brewing and The Fan have teamed up for the only Fan IPA. Available for a limited time. Taste the Fan. Who are we tasting today?
Red 85. Fat Hot.
I think we're tasting lowercase.
Lowercase today?
Yeah, we'll taste the lowercase today out at Binary Brewing with their signature West Coast IPA. Go to Binary Brewing's Beaverton location and ask them about their only fan so good. Only the Fan and Binary Brewing can pull it off.
There we go.
It's Stephen Vaughn yesterday tell me that... they picked me on primetime to be the guy that would climb the Empire State Building and get to the top.
Really?
And I said, why did you do that?
For kicks and giggles?
They said it was me or lowercase because they think we're in the best shape to do it. And I said, I get scared when I'm 12 feet off the ground.
Yeah, that's not you. You're not a heights guy.
I might be able to climb something, but I don't want to because I'm terrified of heights.
Lowercase, I could see doing that, but I also don't know his thoughts on heights. Did you see the people that jumped off the Space Needle the other day?
Oh, I did see that.
That's who he was talking about.
Was that what he was talking about?
Well,
yeah.
I was confused because I said, are you talking about the couple that climbed the Empire State Building? He goes,
because that happened.
Empire State Building? And I was
well,
like,
there
I
was both.
The
so there was
one.
The couple that climbed to the top of the Empire State Building.
And he,
and he proposed. And they held a, I can't remember what. Some,
they've ruined every relationship now because, how do you top that?
Good luck with that. And then there was, I don't know if it was two bros or what, but they climbed over the glass at the Space Needle.
That's what it was.
And then base jumped off of the Space Needle.
He said, I was me or lowercase most likely to do it.
And
I'm like,
no.
I've been up to the Space Needle twice, and both times I was like, okay, saw it. See you later.
I'm going to back away from the edge here.
Get out of here.
Beep, 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 beep.
I want to be up there when the big one hits.
No.
So good stuff from Adam Rittenberg. We'll get to some more of what he talked about either today at some other point. I thought there was some stuff there we could bring back and have conversations with. Also, his omelet sounds delicious.
Does sound good.
A little cheese, a little potato, a little bacon. Oh. Give it to me now.
Sounds fantastic.
But let's step back in the cafe. Got some audio I want to get to here from some dealings of what went around in the world of sports yesterday. Let's start in the Bay Area. An update on a player probably out for the season.
The expectation was that, as it often does with the PCL, that it would heal on its own. And that's why the 49ers proceeded the way they did, rest, go through a regular off-season program, which it seemed to be okay. But then two practices in, that same knee started swelling. And now the team is clearly concerned.
That is our friend Matt Maiocco, NBC Sports Bay Area 49ers first-round pick a couple years ago, Ricky Pearsall.
Yes.
He's
had a rough go, dude. Got
hurt
shot.
Got shot within
a
couple
months.
Had
a rough go in the NFL for Ricky Pearsall.
Well, he's injured his leg again.
Yeah.
And he's probably going to need surgery, and that will mean he's out for the year, which is why you – I mean, I thought he was actually going to come back anyway, but I saw yesterday Deebo Samuel signed a one-year deal to come back to San Francisco, so the boombox with Trent Williams and Deebo is back.
Might as well get the old band back together.
I text with Nemec once in a while because he's also a Niner fan, and I text this to him, and I don't know if he agreed or not, but I said, I'm calling it. Bus pick. Good player. Cannot stay healthy.
Already there on Pearsall. Was he 3 years into the NFL or two?
I think this is his third.
Because he got missed shot the year first one. Full year, right?
He played last year and played. Could not stay healthy.
Right.
I just have zero faith he'll ever stay healthy. He's a good player. He's talented.
Yeah.
He can't stay healthy.
No.
And he's going to be out for a year.
Yeah.
I think you can call it. I think when a guy's this injured, and the shooting has nothing to do with this, but when you get hurt on the field as often as he seemingly does, I'm ready to call it. I'll walk it back if I'm wrong, but I'm calling it. I think it's a bust pick.
Yeah, it has not gone well. He has 3 career touchdowns in 20 career games.
He's an absolute stud when he plays.
When he plays, he's been good. And the numbers on a game-by-game basis are pretty solid in terms of averages of what he puts up. There's just not a lot of availability there. The Debo move was a decent pivot, like considering what's on the market right now. There's not a lot. You have familiarity with him. It didn't work out for him at a year in Washington.
He played almost all season.
His numbers, like, we didn't pay attention to the commies last year because Daniels got hurt and their season was an epic disaster. But his numbers were not that bad.
His
yard after catch numbers were not that bad. And so there's some fat jokes in there and some age jokes in there. But he's certainly still an effective player, and I think they could – you sign Mike Evans in the offseason knowing that that's probably you're going to be your number one and the window's closing, so let's get him and capitalize. And now you added a nice depth piece there. What else you have in the room is a question mark. Mm-hmm. I did see the chuckle of, like, man, it's like day two of training camp and we're already starting with bad 49er injury news. We haven't even gotten a full weekend
yet. Coach came in banged
up. The coach
up.
Has a concussion and loud music is throwing him off. People can't talk to him because he's disoriented. And your first-round pick from a couple of years ago, who you're banking on being the future at that position, is not going to be available likely for the entire year. Oh, by the way, that other wide receiver you took early in the draft, who you then signed to an extension, he's still posting on social media and not allowed out of free agent jail yet.
If there are any issues, it does seem like Nick Sirianni is, he and Jalen Hurts will be the ones who will get the finger pointed at them and their seats will be hot. It all begs the question, you know, really makes you wonder, okay, how do they get to the point where the seat would get hot? Because I think that will really navigate a little further as to what happens. I mean, at the end of the day, this guy has been to 2 Super Bowls with this team and won one of them. He's got an amazing record. They've won a lot. They've been to the playoffs every year under him. It's hard to think that his seat could get, you know, quote, hot. But, alas, we're in Philadelphia, and that is the way things are here.
Yeah, that was Scott Grayson of 97.3 ESPN on Nick Sirianni, who, by the way, very funny video came out of him addressing the team. Camps are opening up. In Nick Sirianni fashion. I read a book this summer, guys. It's called Chop Wood, Carry Water. Feel free to get a copy. I brought in more. It's got chapters, right? About patience. Jalen, your dad always said, effort, it's free. Give it. It's one of the more awkward Nick Sirianni speeches. I read the
did
book,
by the way.
Did
he ChatGPT that one? Did he get a prompt on what to say to his team? Give him a book. Get him motivated.
Chop wood, carry water. Good little book, but very funny. Sirianni definitely feels like he's on the burning hot seat if they underwhelm.
I love the idea, like, this is Philadelphia.
Yep.
We realize that they've won multiple Super Bowls in the last decade, right? And Nick Sirianni has not won all of the Super Bowls in Philadelphia. They had another coach who won a Super Bowl in Philadelphia.
And they fired him 2 years
who has
after.
A statue up of himself out front of the stadium with Nick Foles. We acknowledge that.
Yeah.
He went to the playoffs the following 2 years. One season won a playoff game. The other year did not win a playoff game. And after his first losing season, they fired him. That's how it works in Philly. Like, this is the way they operate as a sports town. If you don't make the playoffs or win a playoff game this year, Nick Sirianni's probably going to get fired. The Hurts one, because the contract stuff's a little more complicated, I certainly would be looking to move on. But, if he didn't win a playoff game this year, bye-bye.
Order up. I still have a long way out. I feel more comfortable, but I am nowhere near where I need to be, especially with learning the playbook, and I still need to go a lot longer and attack the playbook harder. So I'm still ways away. But I feel like I'm more comfortable from day 2, especially from day 1. And I'm just trying to do my part, focus on the next rep, and do everything I possibly can to prepare myself to be the best asset I can for my team. And whatever decision is made at the end, that's fantastic. And I'm all for it. I just want the team to win. So that's where I'm at. But I believe that we have so many great players on the team, and there's a heightened sense of urgency.
That's number 1 pick, Fernando Mendoza, new Raider quarterback, saying he's taking it day by day and learning more and more and just wants to win. funny AI video came out of Max Crosby doing a selfie video, filming behind the scenes, Kirk Cousins ramming Mendoza against a locker and just screaming obscenities at him while Mendoza's like borderline crying. Total AI video.
Yes.
Looked really funny, but there is Fernando Mendoza, who many believe is going to ultimately prove Charles Davis right, that he is going to play much sooner than Daniel Jeremiah's like week 12, week 13.
I mean, what are we doing here, dude? You got to figure out what you got with these guys. We've seen it work for a lot of teams who maybe don't hit as a rookie, but then can hit in the second year because you get that guy experience, right? We saw this with Caleb in Chicago. We saw this with Drake May in New England. I remember Patriots fans 2 years ago arguing with me, you can't put Drake May out there. You got to keep him healthy. What are we talking about? It's the NFL. Guys get hurt. Like, you got to learn how to survive at this level. Let's see what you got. Go get some reps. There's no expectations as a team this year. I think it's a mistake to play Kirk Cousins at all, if you're asking me. By the way, on him, did you see the, like, little cone warm-up drill that they were doing? There was a video that went viral.
He was dead last.
He couldn't. He can't.
He
literally
looks like
can't
Roy
move.
Kent when they decide Roy Kent can't start in Ted Lasso anymore.
I've said a lot of dumb stuff on this show, okay? I said I can outrun an alligator. There's been a lot of comments that, you know, I'm going to stand by because I do that and I'm stubborn.
You don't have to prove it?
I think I could beat Kirk Cousins in a cone drill. I think I could get him.
If he tried. If he, like, really tried, you think you could beat him?
You know who has two intact Achilles? This guy.
Swag, do you buy it?
Mr. 500-yard swimmer? You think he's the authority on this?
Well, I'm not asking him to be the authority.
300-pound squatter? Of course. Of course I'm the authority
Dude,
on this.
He looks so slow.
He looks really
like
slow.
He's always been unathletic. That's never been a strength
of
his.
Unathletic.
But,
he just compared to those guys he
yeah,
is.
Yeah. Mr. Coles. Start Mendoza.
Here, man. Doing? We're back. Next, cameras. All right. Hard knocks. Well, I'm thinking about it. It's like this. We talked about it in the spring, but this is a gift from the football gods. Yes. Okay? I'm one of the most awkward guys in the history of America. I used to worry all the time about, well, what are they going to think of me? And no, I don't want to say the wrong thing. And, screw it. Okay, it doesn't matter. Okay, all I'm worried about is creating the best football team we can possibly create. Okay, and I don't create. And I want to make sure that we're us all the time. That's all I care about. It's a gift because it reminds us to be us every time that you kind of stray away. I want the world to see you guys. See what you get. What makes you guys you? You know? Don't you? How good can we get at what we do? That's camp. It's awesome.
Dirt, I just want you
just
to be you.
You just be you.
Mike McDonald, Hard Knocks teaser there, Seahawks.
I almost expected a Big Gulps quote at the end.
Well, Big Gulps, huh?
Big Gulps, huh?
Look, you can't question anything about him as a coach. He
There's
just
no
won
way.
A Super Bowl. He is a brilliant defensive mind. To the victor go the spoils. I feel like he is going to lay one of the bigger Hard Knocks eggs that we've ever had.
You can never beat Joe Philbin.
Nothing will ever beat Joe Philbin. Joe Philbin will always be the king of that
Far
mountain.
Far and away the worst that will ever exist on television.
Look, again, brilliant mind. There's not a lot, unless you're a Seahawks fan, there's not a lot of entertainment value there.
Joe Philbin was literally the dinosaur guy in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes. Yeah. He's walking around picking up trash at the practice
facility. I don't know. See, I think...
You think he's going to be interesting?
Found that kind of funny, like, you know, this
in an
is
awkward
awful.
Way. Yeah.
Well, he already said I'm the most awkward guy in my life.
You got to own it and acknowledge
it. More personality than we've ever
seen.
Yes.
And what I think is...
Listen to this. Hold on. Listen. Just listen to him.
Good to see everybody, man. We're back. Cameras.
Cameras.
Hard knocks. Well, I'm thinking about it. It's like this. We talked about it in the spring, but...
There's more personality in that 40-second
than Joe Philbin, sure.
Well, than we've ever seen from Mike McDonald.
I've never really seen many videos of him.
That's my point.
So that's the point. I think what he's telling the guys
because they're not
is
that interesting.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be conscious of it. I think he's gotten to a place where now that he's been told, I'm sure he's been briefed on how the production works, what they need access to, when they will be there, all of that stuff as a head coach, because I would want to know exactly what it is that I'm dealing with. He's like that detail oriented. But once you get it and you process it, now he's like, okay, I know where they're going to be. I know what's going to happen. Now I can just go run training camp, and I don't think he's going to worry about it.
I don't think he will at all.
And so I think you're going to get – like you think we're going to get to see the real Coach
and it's not
McDonald.
Gonna be the coolest coach.
No,
I'm not trying to pretend that.
It's not going
to
be
this
Gruden
is not a criticism.
Anything.
I don't want my coach to be entertaining on Hard Knocks. I want my coach to win
but
games.
I think
that does
he's
not
gonna
matter.
Be less dull than you think.
Oh, okay.
I just think it's like a Harbaugh situation. He's not Harbaugh, but I think he'll have moments where you kind of go, what a weird dude, man. What a weird, what an odd duck.
And maybe that's entertaining
for some. But he's a great football coach.
Unbelievable football coach.
He absolutely is.
Seahawks fans are going to eat this out of the palm of their hands, as they should. You just won a Super Bowl, this guy won a title, like, you're going to love every second of this. I am curious, because we do this every year going into Hard Knocks, of like, what's the entertainment value of this team being on Hard Knocks? The Super Bowl champs is a very rare thing. I'll be curious how their personalities stand out. Their quarterback doesn't have the biggest personality. Their head coach doesn't have the biggest personality. JSN's kind of a quiet guy. Maybe I just don't follow enough of their stuff, but he seems like a quiet, unassuming wide receiver.
I think you get a lot of the defensive
probably
guys.
Probably the D-line.
Leonard Williams seems to have a personality.
Leonard Williams will be outspoken. Yeah. I'd just be curious, like, who are the guys that end up standing out as the show goes on? Because it'll start, what, well, 2 weeks from now, a week and a half from now?
But I think if McDonald, if they truly let him into their coaches' meetings, their roster cut downs,
I mean, there's only so much they give
stuff.
You access to, but yeah.
Well, roster cut downs are pretty obvious. Nobody's going to make the team, basically, right? Like, you're going to know the journey of some random white guy. Right. I've been trying for this my whole life. Right. You're like, I love this guy.
Fall in love with him, man.
At the end of the thing, he's going to get cut. He's a practice squad guy.
Are you guys going to watch? You guys still watch Hard Knocks? Because I do still watch. I do it all the way until the last. I don't know. I never watched the last episode.
Was it last year?
God, that's a great question. Off the top
and
of my head.
I didn't say that to, like, make you not know. I'm more saying, I don't know if I've watched in a couple years. Like, weren't the Bills in it 1 year?
The Bills were in it 1 year.
We haven't had access to HBO for a while, so I haven't watched.
That's the one I think I watched, like, half of. Because remember, the defensive lineman was taking his kid race car driving?
Yeah, last year was the Bills. That's what it was. And it was their offensive lineman. Why am I blanking on his name? And he's super into the car driving and
drifting.
Drifting.
I watched some of that one. I will watch all the episodes of this one because, one, I think the NFC West is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And two, we play Seahawk games on our station. Like, we got a lot of Seahawk fans in our area.
Oh, yeah.
So for that interest, I would
watch. Has there ever been a defending Super Bowl champion that's been the subject of it?
They just changed the winning thing. Yeah. Like, a team has to
It used to be you had to pick from the bunch of teams who didn't make the playoffs and didn't have a first-time head coach, and you could not pick one of those, and they changed that rule because all of those teams were saying, no, we don't want to do it, and all the good teams are getting away with not doing it. I always watch all the way until the last episode because the last episode happens on the week that college football actually starts. And so I need a football hole filler until then, but then I have actual football on my TV.
We'll get to some local stuff coming up at the top of the 8 a.m. hour. We're back with a little bit more cuts of audio in Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan. Welcome back in. We have an audio clip we'll play at the back end of this that will carry over, I think, into the 8 a.m. hour. It's a beautiful little Friday edition. Good morning. Hello. Hope your commute's gone okay so far.
Is it about the poors up north?
The poors up north. No, it is not that, actually.
Not
it's poors. More local for us.
Ooh, okay.
We've not talked about
We had a big meeting
city
yesterday.
City council meeting with the Blazers organization. I caught probably the last 30% of that. What I saw, I walked away and was like, oh. And then I had a couple people texting me. Was like, what an utter disaster. And I was like, I guess I got to go back and watch the beginning of what I missed.
It's really interesting because I've seen that. Teddy had a doctor's appointment yesterday. I didn't have a chance to watch much of it live. I tried to catch up on as many of the snippets as I can, but I heard Isaac and Suk last night talk about it. And it was really funny because all I had, I just read pieces about it after the meeting was over. And it was basically what you're describing. This was a disaster. And then I get to Isaac and Suk's segment on it, and they're like, nah, it went pretty good. I'm like, this is,
well,
we are coming at it from two very different angles
I texted with Patrick about this, and we had two differing opinions to a certain degree.
Interesting, yeah. Two people looking at the same thing, watching the same thing, can have a very different takeaway.
Well, I'll just punt on the rest of the college audio. We'll save that for a different segment, because Big Ten Media Day, I think Media Day deserves, you know, the full treatment of, like, let's get to this coach and that program and this conversation.
Like Jed Fish saying, we're playing a game on Sunday, that means we're the 33rd NFL team.
Finish top five in your division, in your conference. All right? Finish top five in your conference.
Okay? Make it too easy sometimes.
Couple notes here. One, Stephen A. Smith's absolutely going to run for president.
Yes.
And I...
Is there any policy position he could have that would get you to vote for him?
Like, get my actual vote.
Your actual vote.
No.
What is the...
He could come out and say...
The biggest issue that you believe
in. We will mandate three-day weekends. We are changing in America.
Four-day week.
Four-day work weeks. Everybody's only working 4 days
Even
anyway.
That would not get you to vote for Stephen A. Smith?
No. Day after Super Bowl is a national holiday.
No, it's already going that way.
That's one day.
It's going to be scheduled on President's Day now, and it's going to be already a holiday for a lot of people.
It should be, but that's not a voting. I need more than one day to get my vote.
Okay. Also, I don't trust any of them.
No.
I was told the Epstein files were fully released.
And we weren't
going
to start
I was
war
told
around.
No new wars. Prices were going down.
That's not quite happening.
So I don't believe any politicians anymore. All right. We'll get to the local stuff. Have you seen the AI video of Tony Romo?
I have seen the AI video of Tony Romo.
Swag. I am deathly afraid of AI. I'm appreciating, by the way, shout out Salem, the community of Salem coming out. And just absolutely telling the politicians to get bent with their data center.
Oh, they wanted to build one in Salem, huh?
They did. They said they tabled it, and then the governor came out and said, actually, I'm not going to allow that. And, like, take it further. Get rid of all of them. They don't serve a purpose, in my opinion, and they waste our resources. That being said, the AI video came out of Tony Romo taking the field sobriety test, and it was him doing the Dak Prescott hip thrust that you saw pre-game.
It's so good.
In his outfit that he took the field sobriety test.
All right, you ready, Tony? Hold on. I got to warm up a little bit. Ha! 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 Got to do those hip swivels.
That's the only thing I'm good with AI on.
Yeah.
Let's get to the local Blazer City Council conversation since we'll get to some college football coming up here. Here was Jamie Dunphy yesterday after the meeting of the City Council on the Trailblazers.
Today was a show from the Blazers that they are serious about coming to the table. I don't know that this guarantees anything. In fact, I think that the distance between the Blazers and the city right now is pretty significant. I do think that once we are able to begin these conversations in a real meaningful way, we will arrive at a conclusion that is beneficial for everybody. I won't sign a blank check. I'm not assuming that it's just a done deal no matter what. And there's a lot of work to be done, but I have a lot of confidence that the people who are going to be involved and the players in this are absolutely serious about finding what that path may be.
So that was Jamie Dunphy, the president of the city council, and they had a big open conversation that you could have streamed and watched. I saw Quick there. I saw Wright Gazaway.
Yeah.
Those are only two that I had noticed in the crowd, but I'm watching the end of this, and, you know, they were non-committal, the Blazers, on elements of the negotiation. They would not give specifics. They cited a weird income tax thing in the city, which wasn't true. I thought that was a bizarre thing by Hankins.
Yeah, that was a bad look for them.
You know, from what I caught, I went back and resaw some of the stuff that I had missed, but from what I caught, my takeaway was they're really hanging on to this lawsuit thing, and I don't like that. I don't blame the city for not sitting there and going, yeah, we're just going to scratch that out now out of the fear of losing the team and then being blamed for it.
Right.
You had Keith Wilson assure them at the very end, I promise you, we will not sue. You have to have 7 votes, and he has to be the deciding on this stuff. As the mayor to do it, they already have 7 people vowing they won't sue. Because city council, like if Mitch Green wanted to sue the Blazers,
he
couldn't do it.
Steve Novick, you can just say that all you want. You're one vote.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
So there's no actual threat of litigation. And then because of the stipulation of first class standard, they were asked about it and they basically, as a team, had to lie and say that they do think it's first class. And then I think it was Olivia Clark was like, then why are we renovating? And I just thought, like, I wish they could have been like, we don't think it's first class. That's why we're renovating the whole inside of the arena.
Yeah.
You know.
But they had to say that because if you said no, then all of a sudden they could say, well, here's our lawyer. We're going to sue you.
My take is this. I don't like the way the Blazers are handling themselves in this right now. I think the city is ready to say, here it is on August 12th. And then you get to the real negotiating stuff of it. That's going to be a problem. It's going to be annoying. It's going to be more media write-ups. I think the Blazers need to get over themselves. Dwayne Hankins has been here since 2013. Was he now part of the bridge lease?
The bridge lease was signed originally when Paul Allen built the building in 1994 or whatever. The original lease with the city, that was in it.
Well, the bridge lease, they came to the agreement.
It's also still in the bridge lease. They signed the bridge lease.
Okay, but like my point is, he's been here. He's known about this. This is suddenly a problem. It's not. This is a Tom Dundon thing.
Well, and the new owner knew about it too because he looked at all the contracts before he bought the team. And so if he wasn't aware of it, he was an idiot. And if he was aware of it, now he's just negotiating in bad faith because he always knew that was in there. I from the readings and the takeaways that I had from it yesterday, not being able to watch all of it, One, I thought it was a big positive that everybody was there. Shout out to the Blazers for showing up. And I know that's the bare minimum of the work that was required of them, but at least they did that, because it would have been a really bad sign if they didn't show up.
The no-show would have been far worse than it them pointing been horrible, to a lawsuit right? stipulation.
I thought the city council won the day yesterday, because the Blazers seemingly were arguing in the past. This whole lawsuit threat that you pointed out, the mayor came out and said, this isn't happening. I have to sign off, and the council has to sign off on it. It's not going to take place. It's only there if you leave. So the whole argument of this is moot, because you're telling us you're not leaving, right? So what's the point in haggling over this? The one thing I do want to point out, because I think it was important that we had that meeting yesterday, nothing from a, like, you know, concepts and detailed plan perspective is actually being debated yet. And I think this needs to be brought up. There's votes coming up in the next couple of weeks. The county is first, and then the city council is second. The city council vote on August 12th, which is when the vote is taking place, is not for the final binding agreement. There was this quote that went viral of them saying, you have 20 points that you disagree with. Can you give us the 20 points? And then I think it was the head counsel of the Blazers was like, no, until you remove the threat of litigation. And we went around in that circle a little bit. We don't need to know their points yet. The August 12th vote is essentially saying that's entering into an MOU, which is a memorandum of understanding, which means basically we agree we want to get this deal done. We agree we want to start working together. Now we have until the end of the year. That's when the work comes in of figuring out, okay, unions, tax amount, this payment, that, like, that's when all that stuff gets ironed out. That August 12th is just a vote to say, we will put the money up. Now let's figure out what the details are in the contract. And so I think it's important to point that out, because a lot of people are insinuating, how do you get this figured out in the next 13 days? You don't. You just need to vote yes on August 12th, say, here's the money. NBA comes in and says, figure this stuff out. And then you have until the end of the year to iron out the details.
Well, it's very interesting. The one thing I held on to, and maybe this is just me being the optimist who is at DEF CON 4 and not worried they're going to leave, is the lead negotiator. Or the council, I should say, for the Blazers. I forget the gal's name.
Yes, I know. Yeah,
Ann Hankins. Both said multiple times, we want to get the deal done.
Right.
Like, they pointed to some things inaccurate, other areas of, like, clearly they're going to try to, I think they're going to, the reason I think they're sticking on this litigation part, the lawsuit, is my opinion is something is going to pop up and they're going to go, we need another $50 million.
Mm.
Because that's the least surprising thing that would happen in an arena renovation, right?
That's one of the big sticking points. Well, is who pays for the override of the cost? Because you can put the money up, but it's going to go more than that.
And if that's wrong, then, you know, we'll have to amend that statement. But, like, my takeaway is that they both kind of said it at the end of looking forward to getting a deal done.
Right.
While the city, I agree with you, largely came out looking pretty good in this.
The Blazers are arguing something that was signed years ago.
Exactly.
That has been in the lease agreement forever. And why is that getting brought up now?
Well, Hankins noted that Portland's current stagnant business climate, high income taxes, and divisive political environment make this a tough city to invest in, and it's harder to sell tickets. They already sell tickets pretty damn well.
Yes.
And I will fully acknowledge there are elements of the city that are not great. I will also follow up. It's very interesting. I think people need to dig into how the Blazers before Dundon were doing business.
Oh, what? You telling everything wasn't perfect under Jody? Is that what you're saying?
I think the idea of, like, climate and business sales being so bad that they're dead last and awful is not entirely accurate of the picture that the organization was actually dealing with.
Maybe there was no sense of urgency because the other person didn't really care that much. Interesting. Nobody would have argued that over the last 4 to 5 years.
There's somebody that I would say I trust that has done some digging on this topic. Of, like, the business climate of Portland and, you know, it not being perfect, but also how much is this the organization's fault?
Right.
Yeah, Dundon fired a bunch of people. There's been, like, outsourcing stuff I've heard where they're using representation that's not even in America.
Got that going for us.
So, like, how do you do good business locally if you're outsourcing
things,
business
over an ocean
that aren't here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Not a good idea right there,
bud. So, like, I think there's some misleading elements from the Blazers' end here, and I agree with you, I think, on the city council. Overall, coming out of this pretty good. It's evident, if you watch that, the mayor and everybody, they want to get this done. They want to sign the 20-year lease, renovate the arena, and move on from this topic.
Yes.
The Blazers playing a little bit of hardball, but I didn't come away, like, super panicked about it. All right, we have a lot to get to in the third hour and the fourth hour. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan.